sende meg e-post, og jeg kan registrere dem på en ny gruppe. Så sjekk kunngjøring, og hvis du vil delta på lab, og du har ikke gruppe, du har ikke deltatt på den første, da send meg e-post. Jeg skal sende informasjon på lab også. Så i dag vi fortsetter med betongdelmateriale, og Mahdi er vår gjesteforeleser for den delen. Ja, takk at du er her.
Yeah.
He will teach in English.
Yes, hello. And thank you for Mohammed for introducing me. I am going to speak about the cement and some additive and admixture to the cement today. So let's start in the first and second hours with cement. So you know the concrete, many of you and all of you know that the concrete is consist of cement, water, and also some additive material. So when we speak about the concrete, one of the important parameters in the concrete is cement. So the question is, what is the definition of the cement, which material we can name it as cement? Please let me to install the before starting to speak about the cement, I used some references which you can see here. Two of them are book, one of them from three of them are book from NTNU, and also your reference book, and also some standards which I am not mentioned here, but you can see the references in the slides. So cement, what is the cement? When we speak about the cement, cement are materials that when we mix it with water start to be set and also start to be hardened. So this material is named as cement, which make a very rigid mass and has lots of coherent structures. So cement made by grinding together of limestone and clay and also some other materials. So when we are going to make a cement, we have to gather some materials which including the limestone and also some clay and also some other material which I introduced to you in the farther slide. We had another description, which is hydraulic cement or Portland cement. Hydraulic cement, the definition of that is the cement that set and become adhesive due to the chemical reaction between the dry ingredient and water. We also have non-hydraulic cement, which will not set in wet condition. And when we have only carbon dioxide for non-hydraulic cement, then it's a start to set. So it's important to just know that what is the hydraulic and non-hydraulic cement. So let's start to speak about the Portland cement. What is the Portland cement? In 1824, Joseph Aspedin in England could produce this material, which because of the color was like the rocks in the island in which the name of the island was Portland. This material, this cement, named Portland cement only because of the color. So in Norway, the production of the Portland cement start in 1892, and the company which start to make it, or the firma which start to make it, is in Eşlemestat. The word Portland cement, when we use the word Portland cement, it means that in the cement we should have 95 to 100% clinker, Portland cement clinker. What is the clinker? We will discuss it about this later. But it's important when we know that when we speak about the Portland cement, especially cement type 1, then it means that 95 to 100% of the cement consists of the Portland cement clinker. And also, the rest is secondary component. But if we want to see and want to divide the cement production in some steps, we could say that the cement production could be divided in three steps. The first step is gathering all the materials, collecting the materials, and mixing and crushing the raw materials. So this step, the first one, could be divided in two methods. The first method is dry method, and the second is wet method. So crushing and mixing the material is the first step in the production of the cement. And the second step, we burn the material. Why we burn this? Because we need to mix material and burn it to produce clinker. And clinker was the main component in the cement. And in the last step, we start to grinding the cement. Because when we have a cement after the burning, the material and the particle are about centimeters. So we have to make it very fine. And then we start to grinding. And during the grinding the cement, we add some other material. And at that time, we can produce different type of the cement. For example, one cement is good for the, for example, sulfide attack or different type of the cement. So let's have a quick review of each step. In the first step, when we speak about the crushing of the raw material, we could say that for manufacturing the cement, we need the limestone and clay. So we should find the material, the rocks, which include these two important material. Also, we have some other materials, but the main materials are limestone and clay. So when we start to mix this material, we also should have some other type of the material. Bauxite and quartz and gypsum are mixed with them in different steps. Then when we mix the material, we start to in this part, we start to mix all of them and heat the material, increase the temperature to 1000 degrees Celsius. So the aim is we start to heat the material, start to increase the temperature to have a calcination. What is the calcination? The calcination is decomposition of the limestone. The main parameters in the cement is limestone. And when we speak about the calcination, or when we increase the temperature to 1000 degree, then the limestone start to decompose and then produce calcium oxide and carbon dioxide. You can see here. And this is the problem of producing the cement, because we have to produce a lot of CO2, and CO2 emission is a problem when we are going to produce the cement. So we should think about this, how to reduce this amount and how to produce less cement because of the CO2 emission. And we also mentioned that the mixing the material, raw material, could be divided in two different methods, dry method and wet method. If we want to speak about the dry process, in this process, limestone and clay are ground separately to very fine particle, and then they are mixed together. After mixing this with the different ratio which we need for our cement, then we add the water. And the raw material in this method are changed to powder in the first step, and then we add the water. So usually this method it is more favorable for different countries and also in Norway. And we have a wet process for mixing the material. In the wet process, the raw material are changed to powders from the in the presence of the water. So in the beginning, we start to add water, and then at the same time, the material start to be greened and start to mix together. So in this method, first clay is purified by washing in a wash mill, and then the limestone add to that, and then start to mix together, and we have a raw slurry. It's a liquid mixture, and then this raw slurry later go to the oven and start to increase the heat and burn, and after that we could have a clinker. So the method is different, but the output is the same. But when we speak about the raw, the wet method, in the wet method we need more energy. So this is the one of the reasons that sometimes we prefer to use the dry method. But the wet method is more accurate for mixing a different percentage of the raw material. But anyway, just good to know that we have, when we speak about the mixing the material, in this step we have two different methods, dry method and wet method. So let's have a short discussion about the burning. We have a raw material, and this material goes to the rotary oven, and after that we start to again decompose the material. The first decomposition was in 1000 degree, but here we increase it to 1400 to 1500. So in this stage, that slurry, that liquid mixture start to loses the moisture and form the small lumps, which these small lumps further named clinker. I will show you the picture of the clinker. And also the clinker should be cooled and then later greened in the next step. But one thing is could be good to know that when we speak about the energy sources, then we have two different options. The first is to use the normal fuel as a coal, and the other is using the alternative method, which could be the organic waste from the households or industrial waste. But why we are thinking about the alternative energy source because of the CO2 emission. Always when we speak about the cement is a strategic material for each country, but at the same time production of the cement could be produced a lot of CO2. It's not good for global warming, so we need to find some other source for the energy. So, and in the last step of the cement production, in the first step we mix the raw material, in the second step we start to burning the material in two different steps. So in the first step 1000 and in the second step 1400-1500 degrees Celsius. And in the last step we should green the material. Here you can see the clinker. The size of the clinker is about centimeters, the diameter of the clinker. And so when we are going to put the clinker in the to be greened, we add some other material to that. One of the most important material is gypsum. We add the gypsum to the clinker because we would like to prevent the flash setting. When we add the gypsum, then it starts to postpone the setting, and then we can grind the clinker. We have enough time to grind the clinker. So the point is the time of the grinding and type of the grinder also influence on the cement quality. And also we add some other additive material like fly ash and a slag to the cement. Why we add this material we will discuss today, but it's good to know that here is the step we add this extra material. So, and then if you want to have a quick view of the cement production, then we can see that in the step 1 to 4 is from the mixing the material, 5 is the burning the material, and the rest is the grinding the material. So this is the process, simplified process of producing the cement. So in the cement production, as I said, one factor is very important, and this factor is CO2 emission. Usually production of the cement produced 4 to 6% CO2 emission in the world. So this is the almost huge value or great percentage. So we have to think about this, how to reduce this. So for example, calcination, decomposition of the limestone, produced 500 kilograms CO2 per each clinker, per each ton clinker. So this is the almost huge value. Then using the alternative energy, which we already discussed, could reduce this value and could be almost half this value. When we, for example, look at the recent cement production in 25 and 30 years, then it's a start to reduce the CO2 production or CO2 emission. So it's important to always think about the alternative fuel. So if you want to see the short clip of production of the cement, maybe this is a nice clip, and this clip show us the summary of the production of the cement, if it's work. I don't know how should I try to
quantum dot light. It turns skies gold as day breaks and paints the world with a billion colors. QLED, the next innovation in TV. Samsung.
It's strange, I don't know what should I do with this, but let's say if I could solve it, then in the next hour we can see this clip. So let's continue to something is goes wrong here. Yeah. So we can't see this clip, unfortunately, but I try to do it in the next hour. So what is the setting and hydration of the cement? When we add the cement to the water, the chemical reaction between the cement and water named as a hydration. So the hydration is the process, is a chemical reaction that produces the heat. And this hydration starts to change the plasticity of the cement. The material starts to lose the plasticity. But we have another parameters we should describe, that we have a setting time. Do you know what is the setting time? The setting time, initial setting time, is the stage that when we start to add water till time that cement start to lose the plasticity. So this time is named as an initial setting time. When we add the water, exactly at that time to time that lose the plasticity. And then the final setting time is the time when we add the water to the cement, and after that cement completely lose the plasticity. So this long process is named as a final setting time. The hydration process may be continue in over a year. And as I said, also during the hydration, the reaction produced lots of heat. So this heat is a kind of synergy for continuation of the hydration. if, for example, you start to add the water to the cement when the weather is warmer, then we have already lots of heat, and then then we have a faster hydration at that temperature. Or when the weather is cold, then the hydration process is slower. And sometimes we need to increase the speed of hydration. Then we need to select the appropriate cement for different environmental conditions. And this is the aim of today's topic, how the composition of the cement influence on the behavior of cement. So, when we speak about the cement, we know that the main factor and parameters in the cement is clinker. Clinker has a different composition. When we have a Portland cement, we have a different compositions in the clinker. Here in this table, you can see the some of this, the majority of these compositions, which these four has the major percentage of the clinker compositions. And also, we can speak a little about each of them. For example, CaO, which is lime, is almost between 60 to 67% of the, consists 67% of the clinker. So the lime is very important parameters which influence on the behavior of the cement, because the amount of the lime in the clinker is high. And if you remember, the clinker, the cement, Portland cement, has around 95% clinker. So it's almost directly influence on the cement behavior. And we have another composition, which is the CIO or silica. Silica give the strength to the cement. So, and also, if we have a lot of silica in the cement, the setting start very slowly and continue slowly. So silica at the same time influence on the strength and also could change the setting time. And we have alumina, which to, if you have too much alumina, then we have a quick start of setting process. So sometimes to increasing the setting process, we have to increase the alumina, but you should be careful that if you have a lot of alumina, then the strength of the cement will be reduced. And we have two other factors here, iron dioxide and magnesia here, which give us, which these are, could change the color of the cement. And also we have calcium and nitrite, which these two is very important for the cement. We will discuss about this. These two could influence the alkali reaction in the cement. And what is that? We will speak about this. But anyway, what should we learn from this slide is that the clinker has a different composition with different percentage. Some of them are very important, and each of compositions has a different influence on the behavior of the clinker and then cement and probably the concrete. So this composition mixed together, and then we have four major phases in Portland clinker. So instead of the focusing on this composition, we focused on this phases, which is the mixture of these compositions. So the first one is C3S, and then C2S, C3A, and C4AF. And then C is the abbreviation of CRO, this one, lime. And S also is SiO2. So this is important to know, because we are going to speak about these four phases a lot. And these four phases, by the percentage of these four phases, we could produce different type of the cement and also control the behavior of the cement. So we are going to discuss more about these four phases. Let's start with the first one, C3S, or allied. The earliest strength of the concrete is due to the C3S. C3S has the almost 50 to 70% of the clinker. So this is very important. It's almost the majority part of the clinker is consist of C3S, and C3S influence on the early strength. And also the reaction with the water in of C3S is almost fast and quick. And the amount of the heat is after during the hydration is around 500 kilojoule per kilogram. So this is the information we need to know about the C3S or allied. So the main things is important to know. C3S is around 70% and also influence on the early strength of the cement. So the other is C2S. Let's come back to this slide. I am speaking about these four phases, which is the part of the Portland clinker composition. So the first one was allied, and the second is C2S. C2S almost is between the 15 to 13% of the Portland clinker, and also the long-term strengths. This is also very important. C3S is responsible for early strength, and C2S is responsible for long-term strength of the rebar. So in the beginning, C2S doesn't have too much influence on the getting the strength, but after a while, it show his responsibility and increase the strength of the cement. And to control the ratio of the C3S to C2S help to control how fast the cement start to get the strength. So the ratio between these two, because these two almost 70 or 80% consist 70 or 80% of the clinker, and then we can play with this ratio and then control the time they are going to get the strength. So and also the heat, the liberated heat here is around 260, but in the previous one was around 500. So C3S produce more heat than C2S. And the third phase in the clinker is C3A or aluminate. And the reaction between the aluminate and water is very fast. So usually when we speak about the setting, quick setting, then the aluminate influence on that. Very quickly start the setting of the cement. And the percentage is about between 5 to 10%. And the weakness, one of the important factor in the aluminate, that aluminate is not resistant against sulfate solution. So if somebody asks you, we are going to make a structure near the, for example, a place that we have a lots of sulfate in soil, then which type of the cement you suggest? For sure, you should think about the cement that this cement has lower value of the aluminate or C3A. And you can see that the heat development here is 900. This is the reason that we have a quick setting when we have aluminate in the clinker. And also, when we speak about the sulfate resistant Portland clinker, then according to the Norwegian standard, it's mentioned that it should be less than 3%. So then the aluminate in the cement should be less than 3%, that we could say that, okay, this cement are could be used in an environmental condition that we have lots of sulfate. So again, I will come back and a quick review to don't lose the subject. We speak about these four factors, C3S, C2S, C3A, and C4AF, which are the major phases in the Portland clinker. We notice that the C3S is influenced on the earliest strengths, C2S influenced on the long-term strengths, and C3A is quick setting, help to have a quick setting, but not good for sulfate. And also we have the ferrit C4AF that that have a slower reaction than C2A, and the percentage is between the 5 and 15. So the C4AF doesn't have too much influence on the cement, but it's influence on the color of the Portland clinker and make it a bit gray. So if we want to look at the pictorial representation of the cross section of the cement, it's like this. We can see here that we have C3A here with this shape, C3S here, which, and also C2S. These two are influenced on the strengths of the clinker and cement. And C4AF is between this shape, and also we have a C3A. So when water is added to the cement, in the first step, C3A start to react and the setting process will start, because C3A is influenced on the setting very quickly. So in the first step, we have lots of heat due to the C3A, and also the setting process will start. And then we have C3S. Then C3S start to produce the early strength, and then also this generated a heat. For the first one it was 900, and for this one it's 500 kilojoule per kilogram. And also C2S was the hydration is slowly, but for the long term it's influence on the strength. And at the end we have a inactive, almost inactive component, that C4AF. So this is the summary of their behavior. So if we look at the hydration rate of the pure material or main phases, we can see that in this picture, you can see that here in the beginning, as we said, that C3S is responsible to get the to increase the early strengths. And you can see in the first days, the majority of early strengths is due to the C3S. So in the 7 to 28 days. But when you look at the end of the graph, for example, after a year, you will see that both C2S and C3S participate in the long-term strengths, and the majority of the strengths is due to the these two components, these two phases. But C3A doesn't have too much influence on the long-term strengths. So this is important to know that when we are going to have a quick strength, then we should focus on the C3S. So, alkali reaction. Shall we have a break or continue? We have 3 minutes to... So let's speak about the alkali reaction and then we could have a break. And if you agree, we could have a short break and then continue till 12. And then after that, you have a time for lunch and maybe to half an hour or something. So, what is the alkali reaction? So when we have a water, when we have a water and also we have a hydroxide ion in the cement and concrete, then the hydroxide ion could have a reaction with the silica, and the silica could be in the aggregate or in the concrete. And then this reaction tend to increase the volume of the aggregate. And then we have an internal crack because the concrete is hardened, and then the reaction start and then start to increase the volume. There is no place, and then crack, stress produce the crack. And then concrete internally cracked. So then this reaction named as a alkali silica reaction, ASR, or alkali aggregate reaction, AAR. So when we speak about the ASR or AR, the concept is the amount of the silica in the concrete. This silica could be come to the concrete from the different sources. And the one of the sources is aggregate, which today we are speaking about this, how to control that, what is the limitation, how to control the ASR. And if you look at this shape, we have a alkali cement plus reactive aggregate. The reactive aggregate, which the aggregate which has enough silica, and then it start to react with the hydroxide ion in the aggregate, and then it start to increase the volume, and at the end we have the expansion yield and cracking of the paste. So, and if you look at some bridges or some concrete structure, you will see the map crack. The shape of the crack is like a map, and this crack is are usually due to the alkali silica reaction. So many years ago, nobody knows about this, and nobody checked the amount of the silica in the aggregate. For example, the majority bridge of the bridge in Norway made around 50 or 60 years ago, or maybe more. And at that time, nobody knows the importance of the ASR, and nobody checked the aggregate. And right now, many of the bridges has this problem. I 2 weeks ago, we were in Stavanger to visit, to inspect the bridge, Hafrsfjord Bridge. And in this bridge also, you can see lots of crack. So this is important, that when you are going to make a structure, you have to control the aggregate to avoid the... And you have to control the amount of the silica to avoid the ASR. So, how to avoid the alkali reaction? The first thing is reduce the reactive aggregate. What is the reactive aggregate? We will discuss when we start to speak about the aggregates, probably in the last hour or third hour. And then keep the alkali content of the concrete under certain limit. So we have to control the amount of the alkali, and then there is a limitation. If it's been lower than that limitation, then we could say that the concrete is safe. And on the other hand, we can use some additives. because the main source of the silica in the concrete is cement. If we reduce the amount of the cement and replace it by some additive like fly ash or like silica fume, then the percentage of the alkali content in the concrete will be reduced. So the one way is also use some additive. We discuss about the additive today. And also, if the environmental condition is completely dry, then we don't have a problem with this probably, because one of the important parameters which in the alkali reaction we need is the moisture. If we sure that this concrete is completely dry, it's not near the seawater or is not in the moisture condition, then we could say that this concrete doesn't have any problem for ASR. So, have a short break and then we can continue. 5 minutes. Okay. So when we speak about the alkali reaction, we have to focus on two oxides, sodium oxide and potassium oxide. These two oxides influence on the alkali reaction. And then with combination of these two, sodium oxide and potassium oxide, we could define the equivalent sodium oxide. So if we calculate the equivalent sodium oxide in the cement and in the concrete, then this value should be below the 3 kilogram per cubic meter. Usually less than 4 kilogram per cubic meter, but in the conservative way it's applied 3 kilogram per cubic meter. So one of the way to control the amount of the sodium oxide and potassium oxide which produce the reaction is to control the weight of that in the concrete. And also we know that cement and additive are commonly the part of the material providing the acid and alkali in the concrete. Then we can also use this provision to control the cement according to the Norwegian standard. If the amount of the equivalent sodium oxide be less than 0.6% in cement, then we could say that this concrete is acceptable. Why here is 0.6? Because 0.6 in the cement is equal to 3 kilogram in the concrete. So we can use one of these two, 3 kilogram in the concrete or 0.6% in the cement. So by this provision we can control the amount of the alkali acid in the concrete. And then if the concrete alkali acid is less than this value, then we could say that this concrete is acceptable for preventing the alkali reaction. We also speak about this, that the admixture and additive especially could help the could reduce the potential of alkali reaction. For example, if according to the Norsk-Betong publication or publication, if the cement type 1, what is the cement type 1, we will discuss later. If we replace 10% of that with silica film, then the equivalent alkali content could be increased from 3 to 5.5 kilogram. So we are allowed to have more alkali content. And if we use fly ash, replace the fly ash in the cement up to 20%, this value could increase to 0.5 or maybe 7, depending on the different firm. So do you have any description for this? Why it's like this? Why if we replace the additive with cement, then we can increase and we could increase the limitation for equivalent alkali content? The reason is generally the pozzolans contribute to bonding the alkalis between the in the reaction product CSH. Then this a huge amount of the alkali in the concrete is bonded by pozzolan and they cannot react. So using the pozzolans or additive help us to bond some percentage of the alkalis. then we can say that, okay, instead of 3 kilogram, you could have 5.5 or 6.5 kilogram in the cement when we have a silica film or fly ash. So this is important. You should know why we are allowed to do that. The other parameters about the cement that we should a bit know about, that is fineness. The cement properties can be different, can be changed by size of the particles. Usually the each particle diameter in the cement is between the 1 to 100 micrometers. And the average size is 2 micrometers. When we reduce the size, then the total area of the particle will increase. It means that they need more water and it's more dense. And increasing the fineness, it means that when make the particle smaller, help us to have a faster strength and heat development, because the contact area between the cement and water will increase. And if the contact area between the cement and water increase, we have more reaction and faster reaction. So the heat increase and the strength, the cement reach the strength faster. So, and sometimes we name this type of the cement with very fine particle, we name it rapid cement. So then it's good to know that the size of the cement particle influence on the behavior of the cement. And there is a test, experimental test. The test is Blaine air permeability test. So in this test, you could find the size of the particles in the cement. So this test, I don't know if you are going to do that here or not, but anyway, this test is really good test to evaluate the fineness of the cement. So we have learned that, let's have a quick review. We have learned that the cement, the majority part of the Portland cement, is a clinker. And clinker has a four major phases, and each phases has a different influence on the cement and concrete properties. And we learned how to play with these phases. In addition, we have learned something about the cement alkali-silica reaction, size of the cement and fineness, and its effect on the concrete properties. But when we go to the standards, we can see that in the standards, we have the classification of the cement. Usually we have three class of the cement: cement type 1, 2, and 3. And type 2 and 3 usually named the blended cement, because it's mixed with some other additive. Or sometimes they name it Portland composite cement instead of the blended cement. So this cement type 1 is consist of the clinker, and there is no additive on that, the first row. But the second type of the cement and the third, there is some extra additive on that. So we name it blended cement or Portland composite cement. So in the table, you can see that in the cement type 1, the Portland cement, the clinker percentage is between 95 to 100, as we expected. And as we define the Portland cement, the amount of the clinker should be between this. And we also have a cement 2, which in this cement we have a up to 35% admixture replaced by cement. So it depends of the type of the cement type 2. We have different type with different additive. We have slag, we have silica film, or we have fly ash and some fillers. So the percentage are different. Based on the different percentage of the additive, then we have different name for the cement. And also we have the slag cement here. This slag cement, based on the amount of the slag, divided to three parts. But in Norway we have two parts, A, B, C, but we don't have C here. In the C we have up till 95% slag. I will describe the difference between the slag, fly ash, and silica fume. And it's good to know that in Norway, generally we have 27 type of the cement, ordinary cement. And also we have 7 type of the cement that are sulfate resistant. Do you remember which factor influence on the sulfate? Which of those 4 phases in the clinker? So we told that C3A, if we have a huge amount of the C3A, this cement is not good for sulfate. Then probably they reduce the C3A in this type of the cement. So, and also the standards allow us that we can produce different type of the cement if we have a good documentation to describe that, okay, we mix this, and then we have a good result, then we can use that in some specific project and cases. So it's not like this, we always use this, we can do something else, but by enough documentation. And if we focused on the strengths in the cement, we have another table in the standard. And in this standard, based on the different amount of the strengths, we have different strengths classification. You could see here the strengths is 32.5, 42.5, and 52. So we have 3 major classes. And for each of them, we have L and R. And this L and R is different due to the amount of the setting time, expansion, and other parameters, and also earlier strengths. For example, in R, it's rapidly get the, after 2 days, get around 10 megapascal strengths. But in the L, it's almost low, and after 7 days, it's just reach 12 megapascal. So we have a classification for the strengths. All L probably low, normal, and rapid. I'm not sure about this name, but anyway, it should be like this. But you can see that if you need some specific strengths based on the design of the structure, then you could type, select a different type of the cement. And when you name the cement, it's usually like this, cement 1, 42.5R. Then you can find it. And then you understand, for example, after 2 days, then the strength is around 20 megapascal. So this table also is mechanical and physical requirement for each strength class. Probably you're familiar with this. I'm not going to describe this graph because you're familiar with this graph, I guess. We have a different, it's just a quick review, we have a different classification of the aggressive environment, corrosion or different carbonation or whatever. And for each classification, in the for each of them, there is a description, amount of the chloride or whatever. For each one, it's suggested to use the durability class for the concrete. We have M90, 60, 45 to MF40. For example, MF40 is the good concrete which we can use it for all the classes, and the majority of difference is based on the cover. So if we understand in a specific case we are going to use, for example, M90 or M45, then there is another table which for each of the durability class M19, M60, 45, it's told us how much is the maximum W binder ratio. For example, here it's mentioned that if you are going to use, for example, M45 in some specific case due to the environmental condition, then the maximum water cement and pozzolan ratio should be 0.45. You are not allowed to use higher than this value. So this table tell us amount about this with different durability ratio. So it's important if you decide to use the specific kind of the concrete in a specific place, first you're familiar with different type of the cement class. At the same time, you should be careful about the maximum water binder ratio and maximum air content in the in this row. And also, we have a minimum effective content of the binder. So based on the durability class, we can select which one is which percentage, especially this part is very important, because W water cement ratio is very important for the quality of the concrete. So we should always check that, and if somebody tell that, okay, in this case the water cement ratio is 0.5 and then you have to use M45, then it's not acceptable. So this is all we wanted to learn about the cement. So the other thing is, first of all, we understand that production of the cement produced lots of CO2, and CO2 emission is not good. One of the way to reduce the cement consumption is using the pozzolan instead of the cement, or replacing with the cement. So this is important to maybe the word additive is better than the pozzolan, because some of the additive is not the pozzolanic material, but the additive could replace with the cement. And some of them we mentioned during the teaching today: silica fume, fly ash, and slag. Slag is not the pozzolan, but silica fume and fly ash. If, for example, I decided to use, for example, 1,000 kilogram cement in a specific project, then I can say that I can use, for example, 30% of this cement and replace it with additive. Then it means that I need 700 kilogram cement, and then it means that this produce less CO2. At the same time, this is the one of the reasons we use it. At the same time, sometimes additive increase and improve the properties of the concrete. So this is the aim of this part, that we learn about the different additive and understand why these additives are important. So we are going to speak about the three of the additive: silica fume, fly ash, and slag. If you want to compare this, you can see that the silica fume is very fine. The size of the each particle is around 0.01 to 1 micrometers. But fly ash and blast furnace slag is around between 1 and 100 micrometers. It's almost the same as the cement, but silica fume is very fine. And all of this additive is byproduct of the industrial production of something. We will discuss about this. And then we mentioned that when we use this additive, then we could reduce the amount of the CO2 emission. And also it's good to know that the fly ash and silica fume are pozzolanic material. What does it mean? The pozzolanic material are able to react chemically with alkalis, and then the reaction product calcium hydroxide after the reaction between the cement and water. So when we could say that this is the pozzolan, that when we say something pozzolan, that we need to cement and water react to each other, produce calcium hydroxide, and after that pozzolan start to react with that. So pozzolanic reaction start after reaction between the cement and water. In the other word, we could say that for pozzolanic material we need the cement. And in the beginning, first of all, cement start to react, and it takes some time, and then pozzolan start to react with the cement production, calcium hydroxide. But slag is a hydraulic material. It means that this material are able to react without combining with cement. Individually, they can produce some stiff material, but they require high pH to activate the chemical process. So it's important to know, and it's good to know, that the fly ash, silica fume are pozzolanic material, but slag is not the pozzolanic material. It's the latent hydraulic material. And according to the Norwegian standard and Eurocode, the percentage of the silica fume and fly ash and the slag is different, the maximum percentage. For the silica fume or SF, we could use it up to 10%, replace it with the cement. For fly ash, it could be between 20 or 35, and for slag, it's between 30 and 65%. It's a huge amount. Assume that if we use the slag, we can reduce and almost half the amount of the cement. And it's very great. If the effect on the properties of the concrete is good, then it would be great. So let's begin to speak about the silica fume. Silica fume, the majority part of the silica fume is SiO2, and it's between the 85 to 98%. And it's the byproduction of the silicon metal firm. And then the shape of the silica fume is spherical, and the size of the particle, as we already mentioned, that between the 0.5 to 1 to 0.5, it's very small and fine particle. But usually if you look at the different references, they mention the different values for this, because you can see here this particles are silica fume, and this big one is the cement. You can see how finer that each particle could be, that the cement particle. So in different references, it mentioned different ranges, because it's completely wide ranges for the silica fume. But it's important that it is very, very finer than cement particle. And this is one of the important characteristic of the silica fume. And also the surface is 20 cubic square meter per gram, while in the cement is 0.3 to 0.6. and why the surface is important? Because if the amount of the surface is higher, then the react with water is easier. We have much more reaction and much more hydration, and then better quality concrete. and also more dense concrete. Also, the density is 2,200 and 3,100 for the cement. So, the high SiO2 in the high content of SiO2 in the silica silica film and also large surface of area make it very reactive material, and then they can produce the lots of CSH, calcium silicate hydrate, that probably you're familiar with that. This is the main part of the cement paste that produce the strength. So if we could increase it and increase the quality of the CSH, then it means that we have a better quality cement paste than concrete. And also, the small size of silica film make it very efficient filler and could also distribute the binder phase CSH very homogeneously, because as it's mentioned here, we can produce some more CSH gel, and then we could distribute it more homogeneous. So it's all of this, the finer size and the large surface area, help us to have a higher quality concrete and cement paste. When pure cement react with water, calcium hydroxide is developed. We know that the first things in the first product is calcium hydroxide, and it's around 20 or 30% of the cement. After production this material, then silica film and pozzolan comes and react with this and produce CSH gel. So, and you should know that the calcium hydroxide is easily detachable. So in this slide, we only introduced what is the kind of review, what is the calcium hydroxide. It's also very easy detachable, and sometimes you can see it in the surface of the concrete, a very white coating that is probably calcium hydroxide. So we understand that. What should we learn from this slide? This is that when cement start to react with water, we have some amount of the calcium hydroxide. And when we have a pozzolanic reaction, when we have some pozzolan like silica film or other things, they start to react with the calcium hydroxide and then produce the CSH gel, which is very good for the concrete. And you can see here this reaction named as a pozzolanic reaction. So we have this reaction here, and we could produce more gel, CSH gel. Then we could say that if we have a more CSH gel, then we have a better quality and higher strength concrete, and better in the durability because it's more strongest concrete and the ions cannot easily penetrate to the concrete. So this is the pozzolanic reaction. So just want to repeat that pozzolanic reaction happened after cement and water reaction. So, the influence of the SF on the concrete workability is depend on the type of the cement and also the admixture dosage. So, when we add the silica film to the concrete, then because of the huge area, surface area, the water demand increase because we need more water. Then it's better, because if you are going to increase the water, because when we add the silica film is very fine aggregate and huge amount of the water. And then we have to increase the water. And if we increase the water in the concrete, the WC ratio would increase. And it's not favorable. It's reduced the strength of the concrete. So what should we do? Then it's suggested to use the silica fume with some water reducing admixture. So if we use it with water reducing, then it's not necessary to increase the amount of the water, because the silica fume has a very small particle and it's a water demand product. And adding the water reducing agent, the admixture, could disperse the cement fog. The water reducing, I will show you in a clip if I could open it, I should try. The water cement, water reducer try to keep the cement particle far from each other and distribute it in the cement, because some of the cement are just want to attach to each other, but water cement, water reducer help and make the concrete more workable, because the cement distributed completely from each other in the concrete and in the cement paste, and then there is more void space, and the void space distributed in the concrete, and then the workability is increased. What's the workability? Concrete flow very easily. So don't forget, when we speak about the silica fume in the concrete, then it's good and it's suggested to use some water reducing admixture. And concrete with silica fume is better on holding the water, and it's, I think it's understandable why it's better to holding the water, because of the fine aggregate and the surface area. And also it's keep more water, then it's reduce the segregation and the aggregate, because it also behaves some kind of the filler in the concrete. Silica fume keep water internally, and then we have low water in the surface of the concrete. And then maybe we should be careful, maybe it's when we have less water in the surface of the concrete, then probably we have some problem with fast drying and then shrinkage, plastic shrinkage in the surface of the concrete. Small crack appear in the surface of the concrete. That's not favorable. Then we have to think about this and we have to weigh to control this. Then how to control this? One simple option is use the plastic cover to avoid the water evaporation in the surface of the concrete, or keep the surface wet. And also it's good to know that the silica fume increase the coherence in the cement paste and in the concrete, because it's distributed the void, and also it's has a fine aggregate, a fine particle, and increase the coherence between this. So and the last things probably, is silica fume reduce bleeding significantly because of the free water in the consumed is wetting of the large surface area and the silica fume. Because the free water absorbed by the silica fume particle, then bleeding of the water will reduce and will control by silica fume. So the majority characteristic of the silica fume in concrete is very good. But we have to be careful about some things, that especially when we are going to make a high strength concrete with silica fume, we have to be careful about the crack in the surface, and also the percentage of the water. We shouldn't increase the water. So we have another factor. The factor is named K factor or activity factor. Let's assume that we have a case, and in this case we have a water and cement, and I said that the water cement ratio is 0.4, for example. But I decided to replace some percentage of the cement with some pozzolanic material like fly ash or silica fume, and at that time the amount of the cement will reduce And if I want to say that the water cement ratio increase is not correct, then I need to have an equivalent water cement ratio which consider the effect of the pozzolanic material. And here we have the P is the different pozzolanic material, which is the fly ash or silica fume, and K is the activity factor. What is the activity factor? Activity factor, just as an example, if for example we said that the activity factor is 0.5 here, it means that for 1 kilogram cement, we have to replace it by 2 kilogram pozzolan. Then it's equal. So all the time we say that the W water cement ratio show us the specific strengths. So if I want to replace some part of the cement, for example, if I have a 1 kilogram cement and I want to replace whole of them with pozzolan, and if the K factor is 0.5, then I should put 2 kilogram pozzolan. But this value is different and different. It need to do some tests to find K factor. But it is important because we need the equivalent water binder ratio. And then it's important to know the K factor for each pozzolanic material. And usually the companies or the factories which produce the pozzolanic material, they will give you the K factor. So you can use the K factor in the design, because the relation between the, based on the water cement ratio, you can find the strengths, and based on the strengths, you can design your structure. So it's good to know the equivalent water cement ratio. And this graph show us the development of the hardening. In the picture, you can see that in the red line, we don't have any silica fume. It's pure cement. In the blue line, we have 5%, and in the yellow one, we have 10% silica fume. And you can see that the amount of the calcium, the amount of the heat by increasing the silica fume will reduce. So if we want to make a conclusion that the calcium hydroxide must be produced by the cement hydration before the pozzolanic reaction. So why, if somebody asks you why the heat here is lower than this, because the pozzolanic reaction need time. We have to wait to have a high calcium hydroxide, and then pozzolanic reaction start to react with calcium hydroxide, and then it take a bit time to produce the heat. It's not very quick reaction. But when we have a pure cement, it's a start to hydrate and hydrate. But again, repeat it, pozzolanic reaction need at the beginning cement start to react with water, and then start to react with the cement production, calcium hydroxide. And because of that, in the beginning we have less heat, because we have less reaction when we have a silica fume. So, effect of the silica fume on the mechanical properties. Usually we can say that silica fume improve the compressive strength, bond strength, and also abrasion resistance of the concrete. If you look at this graph here, for a specific water cement ratio, for example 0.6, in this case we have concrete without silica fume. Here we have a concrete with 8% silica fume, and here we have 16%. In this case, with the water cement ratio 0.6, the compressive strength of the reference concrete is around 45 or 15, but for 8% silica film, it's around 60, and for this one, it's around 85 or 80. So it's increased the compressive strength in the concrete, and also its effect on the bond slip. And the reason for affecting on the bond around the, between the concrete and reinforcement is because, as we discussed, that the concrete is more homogeneous when we have a silica film, because CSH gel distributed homogeneously in the concrete. Yeah. And if we want to speak about the durability and the effect of the silica film and the durability, the first factor is permeability, because when we have a silica film with the fine particles, then the concrete is less permeable. Then it means that the different ions cannot easily go through the concrete, and then concrete is durable concrete. So using the silica film is will reduce the permeability and then increase the durability of the concrete. And also, in many cases, we can use the silica film as a frost resistant in the, to produce the frost resistant concrete. As a case, we can say that if the concrete water cement ratio be lower than 0.3 and the silica film be around 10%, then the concrete for sure would be the frost resistant. And then we can make this concrete in the very low temperature. And the reason is we have a lots of air, lots of small air in the concrete when we have a silica film, because it distributed the air and make it the air very fine, and there is a place for water to escape and not creating the crack internal in the concrete. And the SF also, silica film has a good performance against the chemically aggressive environment. So the reason is reduce the calcium hydroxide content, which is not good for the chemical reaction, because it starts to react with the calcium hydroxide and produce the CSH gel. And having the CSH gel increase the quality of the concrete, and also refine the pores in the structures. So we have very small pores in the structures, and then it's not easy for aggressive ion to go through the concrete. Yeah, and also when we speak about the alkali reaction in the concrete, the silica film is one of the pozzolanic material, which we already described why pozzolanic material are good and could reduce the alkali reaction, because they bond the alkalis in the free alkalis in the concrete and then stop them to make a reaction. And if we are going to speak about the corrosion, silica film reduces the permeability in the concrete, and then chloride ion cannot easily go through the concrete and reach the rebar. So if we want to make a conclusion about the effect of the silica film on the corrosion, then we would 100% say that for the chloride corrosion, silica film is really good, because of the diffusion coefficient of the chloride will reduce by using the silica film, because chloride cannot easily go through the concrete. Yeah. Okay, shall we stop it here or continue? Because we have fly ash and also we have slag. So maybe it's better to stop it here, and then after the lunch continue with this, and then go to that mixture and also some additive. Great. Yeah. 12:30 we will start. So let's start with fly ash. So we understand some properties of the silica fume, which is the most important pozzolan in the industry. And then we are going to know a bit about fly ash, and after that about slag. Okay. So what's the fly ash? Fly ash is a byproduct of burning, coal burning power station. And in Norway, we don't have a coal burning power station, so you don't have too much fly ash. And like a silica fume, in the fly ash we have a majority content of SiO2. Here is 40% to 70%, but in silica fume we have more SiO2. And fly ash is only available in blended cement and Nursem STDFA, which contain 20% fly ash. So if we want to use fly ash in Norway, then we have this type of the fly ash. And then also the standard, as you remembered in the standard, it's mentioned that if you are going to use another type of the concrete with different percentage, if you have enough documentation, then you can use this. So it's for here as well. If you are going to use another mixture of the fly ash, then you can use it. And also in the fly ash, we have a bit carbon, residual carbon, that can change the color of the concrete and make the concrete a bit darker. And if you remember about the size of the fly ash, it was around 1 to 100 micrometers. It's almost in the same size as the cement particle. If you want to compare the fly ash with the silica fume, then we could say that the silica fume has a finer particle, as I told. And also, the main difference between the fly ash and the silica fume is the extent and time of the reaction. And this is because of the different size of the particles. So the other parameters are almost the same. So if we want to evaluate and understand the behavior of the fly ash in the concrete or in the cement, then it's good to have a good understanding of the behavior of silica fume. So the chemical effect of the fly ash, the pozzolanic reaction, it's same as the silica fume. Then, but the chemical activity is lower because we have less SiO2 in the fly ash. And also the particles are coarser than silica fume. Then we have a less heat development in compared with SF. Why? Again, we can say that because of the size of the particle. So 20% fly ash in the cement leads to 15% heat reduction. So if you want to have a low heat cement, then fly ash is the best option to replace with the cement. It's because it's a less reactive pozzolan. And if we go through the physical effect of the fly ash in the development of the fresh concrete, then the shape of the fly ash is a spherical, and then it's help us to have a more workability due to the ball effect. So, and also the stability of the fly ash is good because it's the same behavior as the behavior is the same as the silica fume. And in the hardened concrete, the fly ash react slower than cement. And when we fly add the fly ash to the concrete, then the earlier strength will be reduced. Because of the low heat, the reaction is low, the percentage of this IO2 is less, then it's not very active, then we have a less heat, and in comparison with cement or in comparison with the SF silica fume. And but this low reaction, this less heating, it's really good when we are going to make a concrete in the high temperature, because it's already is very slow, and then higher temperature helps it a bit to have a faster reaction. But if you use the cement which high heat hydration and are going to use it in a high temperature, then it's not good. So fly ash is appropriate for high temperature situation. And also the same as the silica film, it has a positive effect on the reinforcement bond between the reinforcement and concrete. And the main reason is homogeneous we have a homogeneous concrete, the SCH distributed in the concrete. Yep. And also we have less calcium hydroxide. So everything is the same as the silica film. And on the durability, so when the fly ash react, we have a more CSH gel, and also it's improved the permeability. When we have a less permeability, then we have a less ion in the concrete, aggressive ion, and similar to SF, it's resistant to leaching, sulfate attack, and also sulfate attack and acid attack. And the same as the silica film, it's bind the alkali in the concrete and reduce the potential of the alkali silica reaction, and as I said, reduce the chloride ingress. And a slag, what is the slag? A slag is the byproduct of the steel industry, and by itself has a cementitious is a cementitious material. It means that it doesn't need to have a cement to react. A slag is not the pozzolan. A slag is a hydraulic material. So as you can see here, a slag is a latent hydraulic material, and would be able to react with react without cement. And a slag content varies widely in slag cement between 25 and 19%, and typically 65%. And we said that if you remember in the classification of the cement, cement type 3 was the cement with slag, and it's divided in two parts. But in general, we have three parts, which higher amount of the slag is not in the Norwegian standard because we don't have too much slag here in Norway. And also the weight of the slag is lighter than the cement, and also slag is good for chloride, to controlling the chloride induced corrosion. Slags help to have a better workability and reduced separation, and slags react slowly, as I said. And the strength in the first few days is not high, but after a while the strength will be increased, and sometimes could be lower, higher than the cement concrete in long term. And in the low temperature, slag react very slow, and then we have a risk of having the delay ettringate. So this is important because slag, as I said, is not very active, and it needs some heat to have a faster reaction. So it's more better to use the slag in high temperature instead of the low temperature. And in Norway, most of the time we have low temperature. So the slag also is resistant to the sulfate attack and alkali reaction. If we want to summarize the main advantage of the slag in the concrete, it could be, we could say that in two aspects slag is good. The first one is lower content of the calcium hydroxide. It reduces the amount of the calcium hydroxide. It's the same for all pozzolanic material. And also we have a finer pores in the concrete structures, in the cement structure. And then, as a consequence, we have low permeability in the concrete. So it's reduced the aggressive ions penetration to the concrete. So it keeps concrete safe. So this is the all we wanted to speak about the cement and additive. So it is it's important to be familiar with the type of the cement when you are as an engineer or going to design the structure in a different situation, different environmental condition. Then it's important to be familiar with all the component, main component of the clinker, cement, and different type of the cement, and also know some of the important pozzolans and additive to the concrete. But when we speak about the additive, the percentage of additive is between 10% to maybe 90-95% for the slag. We also have some admixture to the concrete. So right now we are going to speak about the admixture and what is the admixture and what's the role of the admixture in the concrete, how it could help the concrete. So admixture. Again, the reference is the same. We use the Concrete Technology 1 in NTNU and Betoning Regular VARC technology and Betoning Competence Bukan. So we have these three references, and if somewhere we use the different references, we mentioned it in the presentation. So according to the RILEM, the definition of the RILEM for the admixture is, admixture is a material that we add to the concrete or mortar or paste, and the the component of the mix is normally exceeds 5% by mass of the cement. If you remember, in the additive we have between 10% and 90%, but admixture are less than 5% by weight we add to the concrete. So they are usually complex, has a complex chemical component, and then it's not easy for civil engineer to understand the detail of the how it's made and how they produce this. But for us it's important to understand their effect on the concrete, in which situation we should use which type of the admixture. This is the main question we should learn. So in Norway, approximately 90% of all type of the admixture sold and used in Norway. So then it means that here in Norway we used the majority of the admixture. Then it showed the importance of the admixture in our industry. Why we have to use the admixture? So sometimes the admixture improve or modify some or several properties of the Portland cement, like the additive. They could improve many of the characteristics in the concrete. And also it can compensate for the deficiations. It means that if there is some problem in the concrete, then we can solve it by adding some admixture. and also reduce the cost of the concrete construction. Sometimes, for example, if you have lots of rebar, lots of armoring in the specific place, and if you want to add the concrete, then it's not easy, it's difficult. And then by adding some plasticizer, super plasticizer, then you can do it very easily in a shorter time and better quality. And also to maintain the quality of the concrete during the stage of mixing, placing, transporting and curing, we can use different type of the admixture. So there is a wide range of the application of the admixture. So we should be familiar and learn in which situation and in which problem which type of that mixture should we use. Let's start with the plasticizer or maybe and super plasticizer. We have in Norway we have four different type of the admixture as a super plasticizer and plasticizer. What is the plasticizer? Plasticizer in the concrete try to disperse the cement particle and then make the concrete more fluable, more workable. So we have four type of the plasticizer, one plasticizer and three super plasticizer, and polycarboxylate could name as the copolymer. And you can see that these two, copolymer by 67% and lignosulfonate by 30%, almost takes the majority of the plasticizer and superplasticizer consumption in Norway. And copolymers is approximately three or four times higher than the other admixture. So its effect is very stronger. So this is the one of the reason in Norway in 67% in 2006 they used this admixture. So as I said, polycarboxylate and then lignosulfonate dominate the Norwegian market. So, and here we can see that how the plasticizer and super plasticizer influence on the behavior and workability of the concrete. We have this type of the cement particle here in the between, and then we have a water around that, and this chemical super plasticizer tries to disperse of the Portland cement particle. So they spreading out the cement particle, and then by spreading out the cement particle, the internal friction between the cement particle will reduce, and then the slump and workability will increase. So the concrete is more fluable. So, and the main reason is this dispersed folliculated cement particle. You can see when we don't have it, cement could be folliculated in some part, but when we have a super plasticizer, then it's completely spread between the concrete. So the slump in the slump test, it's more fluable, but here is not like this. So I hope I can open this file. Let's try.
Question: after water, what is the most widely used product in the world? Concrete. Concrete is a whole science in itself, and one in which dozens of scientists are involved every day at the Lafarge Research Center. Buildings. For a long time, our limited knowledge of concrete meant that we had to erect standard buildings with straight lines to ensure a solid structure. Our research into the chemistry of concrete has enabled us to design a more pliable and sturdy type of concrete, allowing more daringly shaped and more spectacular buildings to be built. To achieve this, we studied the very nature of concrete, analyzing it on a microscopic scale. Fresh, standard concrete meets all durability and solidity requirements, but it is often extremely hard and viscous and difficult to work with. A natural chemical phenomenon lies at the root of this problem. Cement particles in concrete are irresistibly drawn towards each other when mixed with water. To produce concrete with greater fluidity without adding water, Lafarge's scientists have developed their own technology on dispersant additives, commonly known as superplasticizers. A dispersant is a molecule that physically separates the cement particles. These molecules temporarily neutralize the forces of attraction between the cement particles, and this gives the concrete a much more liquid consistency. By taking a closer look, we can see that superplasticizer molecules are made up of long chains and links. The superplasticizer attaches itself to the cement particles in what is known as the adsorption phase. The quality of the raw materials used to make the cement can hinder this adsorption process. The latest generation of superplasticizers takes these cement variations into account. Its more powerful linking system rapidly covers all the particles, regardless of their type. After this, each element has a role to play. The chains, which are also longer, separate the particles and fluidize the mixture. This is known as steric repulsion. On reaction with water, crystals form on the cement particles, cancelling out the superplasticizer's separating effect. To keep concrete in a liquid state for over 2 hours, Lafarge's scientists can control this natural crystallization phenomenon by adjusting the molecule's geometry and response speed. The science of additives therefore opens up greater opportunities for architects who, thanks to more pliable, solid and longer-lasting concrete, can think up more sophisticated designs and build ever more ambitious structures which meet their increasingly imaginative design requirements.
Yeah, so we understand that using the superplasticizer help the cement to be spread, and then the workability will increase. And concrete is more fluid. But there is another way we can do that, is increasing the water. But increasing the water is not useful for the concrete, as you know, because the water-cement ratio will increase, and then the strength and the compressive strength and tensile strength will reduce, which is not favorable for us. So using the superplasticizer or plasticizer is one of the best method to reduce the water-cement ratio. And if you want to produce the highest strength concrete, then application of superplasticizer is very important, because in this case you need to reduce as much as you can the water cement ratio. But let's see the effect of the plasticizer or superplasticizer on the workability and strength of the concrete. Assume that in case one we have normal concrete without superplasticizer and or plasticizer. What happened for the workability and the strength if we add plasticizer to the concrete? What do you think happened for the strength or for the workability? If I add some plasticizer to the concrete, then I expect to be more workable. I mean, be more fluable. But it doesn't influence on the strengths because the water cement ratio is completely the same. I didn't change anything, just add some plasticizer in the concrete. Then the result is like this: slump improved, but the strength is unchanged. When strength will change? When I at the same time reduce the water, then in this case water cement ratio will be reduced. In the second case, I have the concrete, I add plasticizer and reduce the water. So what happened? What's your expectation? Nothing. So if at the same time I put the plasticizer and reduce the water, if I reduce the water, what happened? Water cement ratio is reduced. And then it means that the strength will be increased. So in this case, I add superplasticizer, then I expect to more workable concrete. But at the same time, I reduce the water. So I can say that the workability or slump is unchanged. But the point is I reduce the water, then water cement ratio also is reduced. And when water cement ratio is reduced, then I have more strength. And the third one, what is your expectation? I add superplasticizer, but reduced water and cement. Just thinking about the water cement ratio and the effect of the plasticizer. So if I add plasticizer, what happened? The workability will increase, but at the same time I reduce the water and cement. Then I can say that there is no change in the concrete because I also reduce the cement. So water cement is constant, and also increase the plasticizer but reduce the water, then the workability also is unchanged. And the last case, if I add superplasticizer, the behavior is like this: only superplasticizer, the slump will increase a lot. So the concrete would be very workable. But I haven't changed any other parameters, then the strength would be the same. So we can use, what is the aim of this figure is, we can use the superplasticizer and plasticizer for different aim. Sometimes the aim is increase the strength, then we should use this. Add superplasticizer and reduce the water. Or sometimes the aim is increase the workability. Just add the superplasticizer or plasticizer, then the workability will increase. And I don't care about the strength in this case. So you will see that we can play with the concrete and reach our aim by different type of this plasticizer and superplasticizer. So water reduction. Based on the EN934 part 2, the plasticizer shall have at least 5% water reduction. So it should be able to reduce 5% of the water reduction capacity. So then by this percentage we can say that this is the plasticizer based on the standard. So using the plasticizer should lead to 5% reduction or removal of the mixing water without losing workability. It shouldn't influence on the workability. Most commercial plasticizer can reduce mixing water up to 8 to 10%. And super plasticizer, and this is the difference between the plasticizer and super plasticizer. Super plasticizer shall have at least 12% water reduction capacity without changing the workability. And assume that if you could reduce water 12%, then water cement ratio will reduce a lot. And then in the same workability, you will have a really high quality concrete. So then if we go through the market, we, as I said, we have four type of the plasticizer and super plasticizer. Here is the lignosulfonate and naphthalene and melamine and polycarboxylate or copolymer, which these three are super plasticizer, and this is the plasticizer, and this is the one of the best ones. Since 1997 in Norway they used it, and this is the old type of the plasticizer, but still people use it in Norway. I think around 30%, if I remember correct, at least based on the information in 2006. I don't know about 2017, but anyway, so we understand what is the super plasticizer, why we should use this, then we can and what is the aim of using this. The aim could be different, could be workability or could be strength. The another admixture is air entraining admixture. Air entraining admixture usually used for controlling the frost. When we have a freeze and thaw process, then we use the air entraining admixture. And also it could improve the surface scaling caused by chemical de-icer. So we could say that we have two main aim of using the air entrain. Well, how it work? Usually we have a capillary pores and we have a entrapped air. So entrapped air are between 1 to 10 millimeters, and we can see the entrapped air by eye. But when we add some entrained void or pores into the concrete, these are very small, and we cannot see that by normal eyes or naked eyes. So, and also we have a capillary pores. Then the capillary pores are very, very small, which could absorb the water. So they are between the capillary pores and the size and also entrapped air. So what is the advantage? Okay, we applied some things, some pores and void to the concrete. What is the advantage? How they can control the frost damage in the concrete? If we go through the definition or the provision for the air entrance, applying the too much air in the concrete also leads to reduction in the compressive strength. So we should be careful. We cannot say that, okay, we have a freezing problem here, then we have to apply a lot of air to the concrete. No, because increasing the air in the concrete, air entrained in the concrete, then leads to reduced in the compressive strength of the concrete. Then by increasing 1% air content, then 5% reduction in the compressive strength we have. So it's huge amount. Then we should be careful. So you should have a good engineering evaluation and make a good decision how much air you need. And also using the air entrance also lead to improve the workability, and the reason is clear, because we have a kind of ball bearing effect in the air bubble, and then it could make concrete more fluidable. And here we can understand how air could control the freezing problem. So we have at the lower when the temperature goes down, then these are the pores created by air. They are near the there is a water in the pores, bigger pores, and the water starts to freeze into ice and then increase the volume. And if by increasing the volume the water couldn't find a good place to escape, then it creates the crack. But these pores, this void we created around them, then the water has a place to just go through that and then reduce the stress. Then we don't have a crack. So the water will be pushed into the air interrainment pores. So we understand that the water in the capillary pores could move to the air in transport, and then we don't have a problem of the expansion or cracking. Yeah. The other admixture we are going to speak is accelerator. We have a admixture that can increase the hydration reaction. So we can also use the acceleration to in purpose of the shortening setting time and also increasing the early strength development. Here you can see that by adding the accelerator, there is two way: shortening the setting time or increasing the hardening temperature. So here is the temperature and here is the reference concrete, and in the setting cement paste we have the accelerator for the setting aim, and also we have accelerator for hardening or hardening accelerator. And if you look at the graph, that in the setting graph here, it start to produce the heat earlier than the reference concrete here. It's a start from here, but the reference concrete start to heating here. By adding the accelerator, we could produce faster heat, and you see that the slope is completely the same as that, and we reach here faster. We reach this point faster. But on the other hand, in the hardening accelerator, start the production of the heat at the same time as the reference beam. So they work at the same time. We have accelerator, but they start to produce the heat at the same time. But the slope here is steeper. And also we have higher heat, hydration heat. So there is a two aim of using the accelerator. One of them is the shortening the setting time, and the other is increasing early strength development or hardening state. And in the setting accelerator, the benefit of reduced setting time may be earlier finishing of the surface, reduction of the hydraulic pressure on forms, or possibility to apply sprayed concrete to vertical and overhead substrate. So if, for example, if you want to have a shotcrete on the wall or in the tunnel or everywhere and splash the concrete to the wall, then the setting time is very important. We need to have a shorter setting time. And accelerator dosage for shotcrete should be in the range of the 6 to 8 admixture by weight of the cement. So shotcrete accelerator can be divided in two parts. Just quickly, some quick information about the shotcrete. The shotcrete could be used the alkaline accelerator or free alkaline accelerator. Then free alkaline accelerator give a very high early setting. So when we need to use the hardening accelerator, The benefit of the using the hardening accelerator could be in the earlier removal of the form. If it's hardened faster, then we could remove it faster. Then it's we can save lots of money if you, for example, borrow the form or whatever. And reduction of the required period of the curing and protection, and also in the repair. So you need to make the concrete, you need to have a fast hardened concrete, then you have to use the hardened accelerator. Early compressive strength, after 10 or 25, there was increased to 20 or 15%. So the concrete strength also by using the hardening accelerator, early concrete strength will increase. But the final strength is not changed. Yeah. There are several ways to increase the early strength of the concrete that may we can replace instead of using the accelerator. Why we should replace? Because sometimes some of the accelerator has a negative effect on the concrete. For example, if we use the calcium chloride, it could be it's not good for the corrosion in the concrete, reinforcement corrosion, because it has a chloride, and chloride could produce the chloride damage in the reinforcement. Then sometimes, instead of using the accelerator, if you are going to have a hardening accelerator, we can use some other alternative way. For example, use the more finely grained cement, very fine cement, or use the heated concrete, and also increasing the amount of the cement in the concrete because it produces much more heat and then it's start to harden faster, and also utilize the heat of hydration by insulation. We can use some foam and then isolate the concrete to keep the heat and increase the heat during the hydration process. So most of the time, or not most of the time, then many times we can use the alternative method instead of using the admixture, because this admixture could have a negative effect on the corrosion. But if you notice that no, it's necessary to do that, then we have to select the appropriate hardening accelerator. We also have a retarding admixture. In the retarding admixture, it start to slow down the process of the hydration. Sometimes we need to reduce the speed of the hydration, because if the hydration goes very fast, for example, assume that we are in a very high temperature and we are going to make some concrete structure, then if the hydration process is very fast, the first problem is all the cement cannot participate in the hydration. And we have lots of cement which is not hydrated. So the quality of concrete will reduce. Then you have to use enough time for the hydration. So then you have to retard the hydration process and use the retarder. And retarder do not decrease the initial temperature of the concrete. The typical material used as a retarder are lignin, borax, sugar, and also salt. For example, if you use the sugar in a normal temperature between the 0.5 or 0.1 percentage, it have a very little effect on the rate of hydration. But if you increase it only to 0.2%, then the hydration can be retarded to such an extent that the final set may not take place after 72 hours. So you can see that if you add a bit sugar as a retarder, then the process of the hydration will be delayed. Though the main purpose of the delaying of the setting time, when we need to have a delayed setting time, to place the temperature, the concrete at the high temperature, over than 30 degrees. This is clear because the high temperature try to increase the speed of the hydration. As I said, there are some cement which are anhydrate cement, but it's not favorable for us. And then also to keep the concrete workable through the long transporting. For example, if we have a long pipe, or we are going to move the concrete from here to another city, 2 hours or 3 hours driving, then we have to use the retarder. And also, it's mentioned here for setting of the concrete truck in the case of the delay, also for eliminating of the cold join and discontinuous enlarge. So you make old concrete, you make a concrete, and tomorrow you are going to add another concrete on that. So you prefer that the previous concrete still continue in the hardening process. So you would like to delay the process of the hardening until tomorrow another layer come to the previous concrete. But if the first concrete is being completely hardened and add the another concrete, the joint between these two is not good. So sometimes in this case also you need to use the retarder. And if we look at the graph here, the retarder could be used in, again, two aspects. One of them is the hardening and the other is the setting. And the setting retarder produced heat later than the reference beam. The reference beam is here, but for the setting is start later. So we don't have any heat till this day or hours. And after that, it start to heat with the same slope of the reference beam. But in case of the hardening retarder, start production of it. So it for the hardening, it's starting the same point and same day or time, but the slope is different, slower. And then the heat development is slower. When we are going to have this one? To give an overall decrease in the rate of the heat evaluation and thereby lowering the maximum temperature to a level where thermal crack pose less problem. So when we have a thermal crack problem, then we would like to reduce the temperature, the final temperature. Then in this case, you can see that the temperature, the heat hydration here is lower than the reference beam. So sometimes we would like to have a lower temperature in the concrete, lower heat in the concrete. Then we could use the retarder as a hardening retarder. So, corrosion inhibitor. The chloride can cause the corrosion of steel reinforcement in concrete, as you know, and ferrous oxide and ferric oxide form the surface of the reinforcement steel in the concrete. So we have the surface in the rebar in the concrete, and ferrous oxide can react with the chloride, and this reaction could remove the surface steel and could also form the rust. The chloride ion continue to attack the steel until the oxide layer is destroyed. There is an oxide layer, protective layer around the rebar. And if this layer will be removed, then the steel start to be corroded. So corrosion inhibiting admixture chemically arrest the corrosion reactions. So there are some corrosion inhibitors, just good to know that calcium nitrate, sodium nitrate, and dimethyl ethanolamine and amines. So these four corrosion inhibitor could be used in case that we need to control the corrosion. So let's have a 5 minutes break and then we can finish it till 2. Thank you.